This is Rhode Island's longest running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. My name is Don Soa. As the announcer just said, this is Get Back to Basics Tuesday here at AM 790, your home of talking business. And that means that Donna Soa Allard is here. Hi, Donna.
Hi, happy to be here.
Good, welcome to the show.
On this beautiful day.
I think the gauge in my car, I actually looked down at it at some point. I was on the highway, and it said like it was almost 80 degrees out, and I wasn't sure that.
Well,
was,
this afternoon, I think it got
well
close to that.
It was well into the 70s. It was pretty amazing. And every place you go, even coming into the building here at Wampanoag, talking to Dee downstairs, she said, well, I think I'm going to move the desk and everything outside into the parking lot.
I think it was about 80 degrees in the studio when we walked in here.
For whatever reason, our studio, they have not. They said that it's the actual unit that's on the roof that's a problem that feeds. But I said, yeah, but it seems to feed only this studio because I noticed that the hallway is nice and cool outside.
You know what? It's actually, this is like the VIP section. It's actually a sauna. We have like a steam room.
Oh,
you
want us
sauna.
To have, oh, okay, there you go.
It's a... Yeah, it's benefits.
Well, anyway, we're now moving into the second quarter of 2017, the second quarter of the brand new presidential administration, the new government format, and markets continue to go through this. People, they're not describing it as up and down as much as they're describing it as moving sideways, because a couple of points up yesterday in all three indices, a couple of points down today in all three industries. Mm-hmm. I mean, in all three indices. And if you sit back and look at it on a chart and just step back a little bit, it almost
doesn't look like much.
It almost looks like a straight line moving sideways until you come up really, really close to you see that it jiggles up here and down a little bit. But I mean, that means that investors probably are in the psychological funk where they're saying, okay, look, we know what the bucket list that we thought was we were getting with this new administration. We know what the president wants to do. But now all of a sudden we have to deal with the possible realities that the president has to deal with the legislature, which is the House and the Senate. And all of a sudden, and that's not as easy. It was easier said than done, I guess.
Who knew it would be so difficult?
Well, the president did say himself, he says, well, you know, healthcare is complicated. That's what he said. Healthcare
is
complicated.
He's going to find that tax reform is complicated too. So yeah. I'm hoping that tax reform actually goes a bit better than our healthcare reform went.
Well, the advice that seems to be that he's getting is, especially I know he had a whole bunch of CEOs that is at the White House today. They're starting to offer advice that I think was sort of in line with some comments that I made a few weeks ago, and that is to say, why go after these big, gigantic plans when, in fact, just fixing a few of the little things would actually be a big improvement?
Our tax system is so, so complicated. If you look at tax, our tax laws, our tax, the whole enchilada is so complicated and so complex and so big that if you can take a few items and that are going to be meaningful to people, you know, that would even be seen as a success. But when it comes to the market, I mean, the market is expecting tax reform.
Well, one really cool thing they could do would be anything that doesn't cost anything.
Keep it revenue neutral.
If it doesn't cost anything. So there's something like, I mean, so they were talking about this on the news the other day. They were saying, well, wait a minute. We have, a lot of people don't know this. They hear the conversation, but they're not always aware of the details. They said that there are a lot of major corporations like General Electric and Disney and Procter & Gamble. These are global companies who generate, sometimes in some cases, more than half their revenue outside the United States, even though they are chartered U.S. corporations. They generate revenue, say, in Europe. Let's just pick France, for example, any one country. In that country, under the global, agreements were made decades and decades ago. They're allowed locally to tax revenue generated within their countries. Mm-hmm. So they have a specific tax rate, and usually those things are negotiated. But the United States is one of two large industrial countries in the world that will subsequently tax the same dollars again if those dollars come in back into the United States. So the end result is the dollars stay in France.
And that's what everyone's talking about when you hear repatriating the money.
Yeah, if France charges on revenues that are net profit revenues that are generated in France, let's say they charge 15%, and then that money is then they brought into the U.S. so that the corporation can pay out dividends, make capital expenses, make other investments with those dollars.
They're going to get taxed again on the money that comes
and
in.
And it can be as high as 35% in the U.S. So all of a sudden, you're looking at half of all revenue that any major company generates in Europe, or in France in this case, half of the revenue goes away, doesn't come back. So, but this is an odd thing. You've heard that even during the campaign, they said, well, wait a minute. If we just agree, we change the tax code that says revenue generated outside the U.S. by American chartered companies, yes, we understand it is taxed overseas at some marginal rate, but then we will also, if that money comes back into the U.S., we will also charge, say, 15 or 20%. So it's 30% or 35% total as opposed to 50% like we're looking at. Why would a company bring the money back to the U.S. if they're going to lose most of it?
And so what they were talking about, and I believe it's referred to as a tax holiday, right, in an effort to get companies to repatriate some of
those
funds.
Well, you know, they tried that a few years ago in a previous, and some money came back in, but they're saying, wait a minute.
Still not worth it.
This is revenue the United States government will not get. Because a company like a Microsoft or a GE or anybody else will say, you know, we do a lot of work.
We can invest it overseas.
We can invest it overseas. I said, well, you know, we'll pay the taxes here in the U.S. on U.S.-based profits. And anything done in Asia or Latin America or Europe, you know, we will use that for our projects that are overseas because we are a global company. So the U.S. gets no benefit from that at all. And we're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars of tax, potential tax revenue that doesn't come into the U.S. And it would cost us nothing to make this change. Why would you not do it? So I'm not saying that they won't do it. I'm just saying that it just doesn't make sense that it hasn't happened already.
That's an example of something where they could lower the rate to make it worth it, and that's new revenue.
But what they were thinking initially was by eliminating, getting rid of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, a large component of what paid for the features of Obamacare, which was like the 24 million people who were uninsured before who are now insured, having the people who would normally be not insurable for medical pre-existing conditions. All of that stuff costs millions and millions of dollars. They said if you get rid of the Obamacare, then we save $1 trillion over a 10-year period. That money can then be used to afford tax cuts that they would like to do. So that's a different part of tax reform, is cutting taxes in different categories, and a whole series of other investments in infrastructure and everything else. So they were hoping to take money from Obamacare and put it towards a number of reforms, whether it's in taxation
or whether it's tax reforms,
and all as well as infrastructure spending and things that would hopefully be done properly, could be stimulative to the overall economy and create jobs too. But the other thing that the president is now going to have to deal with, because he used the whole jobs issue as such a big part of his platform, is that right now the unemployment rate in the United States is well below 5%, and they're talking about a lot of the areas in which he would like to create jobs, and they're saying there are not a lot of available job openings to provide the jobs that the president wants. In other words, you've got
almost...
You
can't create a position for the sake of creating a
position.
Yeah,
when you've got full employment, that means that anybody who actually really wants a job can get one. That's the bottom line on it. And that makes it really, really hard for... When the job numbers just came out the other day, they were like 98,000 jobs for the month of March were created, and they were expecting 200,000. So, I mean, that's a big difference. That's a big number difference. But I said to myself, I'm surprised that they could create 98 to 100,000 jobs in an environment.
When you have employment at the numbers where it is.
When you have pretty much full employment. Now, part of what we were discussing just to start tonight's show was this issue and the importance of tax policy. Taxes are big. They affect plans and programs that the government can create for the benefit of the nation. It also is a big part of what Donna Grace and I do and Steve Beauvais does every day, dealing with financial planning, understanding the tax code as it affects individuals and families especially. It's a big, big deal because, Donna, it affects strategies that you might have with a client who may not want to wait till they're 59 and a half or 60 to actually retire.
Absolutely. The IRS has rules on your retirement accounts, so we have to take a look at where assets are located. We talk about asset allocation. Well, when it comes to this issue, we're talking about asset location in terms of where's your money and how is it invested.
See, they've got rules now about when you can collect Social Security. Now, that may change moving into the future. Right now, it goes up like in the baby boomer generation. It's roughly age 66 is when you could get full retirement, and 62 would be early retirement, and you get a percentage of what your full retirement pay would be. I would not be at all surprised while I'm still around on this earth that the early retirement for Social Security benefit will become 65 at some point, and 70 will become full retirement because we're living so much longer. But the government created disincentives to keep you from taking what was your self-funded, self-programmed retirement plans, like your company-related plan, your IRAs, your 401ks, and the like, and starting to use them early. Because if you use them early, let's face it, the likelihood
is you put your retirement in jeopardy.
Well, what might have been a 30-year retirement if you retire at 60 and live to 90, if all of a sudden you're retiring at 50 or 55.
40 years is a long time to have that
fund, last. You have to fund a much bigger piece of the retirement pie in your own life, which may mean you put greater stress on the tax system, the Social Security system, and retirement systems in general, which are already under a great deal of pressure. We're going to take a quick break, and on tonight's program, we're going to be discussing that, some of the ramifications and issues related to early retirement. I'm Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard, and we will be right back. We're back with tonight's Money Talk program. Let's get back to basics Money Talk here on AM 790 with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. Tonight's topic is probably one that doesn't get talked about a lot, and I noticed this as I was looking at various articles written on the topic of the perils of early retirement. And they noticed that one of the authors on one of the articles said, he said, you know, when I was actually researching all of the variations on this, what I discovered was that probably 80% of all articles written are, how do I achieve early retirement? Not, you know, are there negatives that should be considered when looking at early retirement?
Well, and you may find from working with clients that a lot of people who weren't expecting to retire early are suddenly being faced with it as an option because they're being offered an early retirement package. And sometimes, you know, it sounds fantastic at first because they're thinking to themselves, I've been working since I was 18 years old. Here I am. I'm 60. I would love to retire now. They're giving me this option. You know, does this work for me? But it's really important to go through with people, you know, what does this really mean just by adding an extra 6 years onto your retirement or whatever it may be? What are you giving up in those years that you would have been working in order to take this early retirement? And, you know, can you really afford it?
Well, the Employment Benefit Research Institute, one of the outfits that we get a lot of articles from and different opinions, they do a lot of research in so many different areas of retirement and investing. And they've indicated that, you know, a lot of people used to believe that working longer is the simple answer.
Some it is.
To actually bridging the gap between insufficient savings and the financial needs of retirement. But according to that firm, the Benefits Research Institute, back in 2016, they did a survey last year. The proportion of workers age 25 and over who plan on keeping their jobs after age 65, it's gone from 11% back in 1991 when they first did the survey. It's up to 37% last year in 2016. So it's gone from 11% to 37%.
You said this is over the age of 65?
Over the age of 25.
I mean, after 65.
Who actually expect that they will be working after age 65, and another quarter of workers expect that they won't retire until age 70 or beyond.
Well, and that's something that we talk about all the time.
This is your generation. These are, you know.
Well, I think that we have fairly realistic expectations when it comes to that because, for one, we've seen our parents' generation of baby boomers woefully unprepared for retirement. I meet with people all the time who are coming in and saying, they come to see me for the first time and say, you know, am I going to be able to retire? I say, well, let's take a look. What do you have for income streams and what do you have for savings? And sometimes I'm sadly shocked by how little they have. And I'm able to offer a little advice, but not much else.
Well, you know, honey, every retirement piece of software that you've ever looked at, every time you look at it, you go online and there's so many free ones online. And they're asking you, well, what average rate of return would you expect? Well, how much do you expect? Well, they may be trying to calculate how much you need to put away to get to reach your goals. But if the goals that you have, they're asking the question, what rate of return are you expecting pre-retirement? And then at what age do you expect to retire? So you're putting all of these algorithms in place to figure out, you know, what's retirement going to look like and what are the chances that I can make it to age 90 or whatever the number is. But living to age 90 on the money that you've been able to save and invest over time, That works only if the number, the amount you were able to save and put away is consistent with your goals for, number one, you've got to know how long you're actually going to be able to work and save that money at that rate of return. Mm-hmm. And then at what point do you go from growing and saving the money to actually income being
turning
the prime, turning
into
yeah. income, and for how long? Because they will say, and for how long would you like to live? I mean, they always ask that silly question, too.
So I spoke with someone today whose mom is in her early 90s, much like your parents. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, my mom is the first person in her family to live over the age of 79. She said she was shocked when every day she's woken up since she turned 80. She's waking up saying, I'm still here. I'm still here. And here she is at like 93 or 94. And this is what we have to be planning for. We need to be planning for longevity. Even if your family doesn't have, you know, great longevity in it, you may be the different one. You may be the one to, you know, buck the trend and live longer. You have to assume that you're going to live for a long time and that your money is going to need to last you for a long time.
Well, I always say when I'm talking to people about the issue of wealth, and they say, well, what exactly is wealth? And I said, well, everybody's definition is different, so it's hard. But I said, to me, the idea of wealth, especially when you're talking about retirement, is that the decisions that you make about your life and about your retirement will be made by you and not dictated to you by your circumstances or by someone else.
It's about control. It's absolutely about control. And it's not shocking to me that for you that that is your definition, because you're someone who likes to be in control. You don't want to be stuck in a situation where your choices are limited or, quite frankly, being made for you because you don't have resources.
So as part of this discussion, of course, as part of the study that the Employment Benefit Research Institute did, they say, so what do you do? Say you plan to actually work to age 68 or 70. They say mm-hmm. that was your plan. So that also means you plan to have that level of income for those extra years. And you also would be saving, have the opportunity to save money and build your nest egg during those extra years. But if, let's say, you get there and suddenly you find yourself unemployed at age 58. And that may have been
58. That's 10 years earlier than you were expecting to retire.
And they said, you know, people that got there and found that their expectations had changed and were unfulfilled, they were in many cases forced to retire early for a number of reasons, including health. Sometimes their own health mm-hmm. dictated it. Health of others, someone that you now have to stay at home and be a caregiver. You were laid off, so there's financial and economic reasons for it. And sometimes you get pressure from your family and friends for other reasons that may make it difficult for you to actually continue working. I thought about
that. Not you. You were 58, and people are like, there's no way you're retiring. Keep working.
I just look at it. I say to myself, like, says, you know, it's a nice place. Look, I've always said the most wonderful thing that I could ever do for a client would be to have a retirement client who chooses to work after retirement because they want to, not
sure.
because they have to. If you go to work every day because you are good at your job, you love doing it, you love having something to do every day because you love the routine, and you like the people that you work with every day.
Feel fulfilled.
There's a fulfillment aspect to that. You're staying busy. That keeps your brain active. You're going to live longer, I think, if you're able to keep active like that. And, of course, financially, it means you never have to actually deal with the question of, geez, have I saved enough money between Social Security and my personal 401k and all my other savings? Have I saved enough to survive to what may be my normal retirement?
Because, you know, every year that you work, right, every additional year that you work over whatever age you were considering is a year that, one, you're making more money, two, you're not withdrawing from your assets, three, you don't need to access your Social Security, so that benefit can continue to grow, and four, it's another year that you're saving more money and getting that employer match. So if you decide to retire early of your own accord, that's a lot that you're giving up, and you need to make sure that you've really run the numbers and are making a very careful decision, because as you suggested, if you're expecting to potentially have a 25-year retirement as it is or 30-year retirement as it is, to then go and extend it even earlier, especially if it's before 65 when you qualify for Medicare. Before 65, you have to either go on COBRA from your previous employer, if that's an option, or like if you're offered an early retirement, or you're going to be paying for private health insurance if you can't access it through your spouse. So if you're taking this early retirement and you're not only eliminating all of those options for saving and not spending during those years, but also now creating additional expenses, these are decisions that have to be very carefully thought out.
You know, it's funny. The AARP came up with made some very, very good observations related to this topic. And they said, you know, when you're young, so you yourself, you are a professional in your 30s. Okay, you are in the early stage. You're in the early third of your career. And what is it? What do you do that's unique to this time period? In addition to whatever your expectations are for personal growth, financial growth, you expect to continue investing in yourself and in your career and in your skills, your skill set.
I know I'm not at my peak.
So you will continue. You go to continuing education classes. You take courses. You take the CE credits. You go through all of that. You also, when possible, when you identify something new and interesting, you start reading about it, looking about it, maybe attend a program related to it. In other words, and another thing you're doing when you're very young is you are networking. You're networking with other professionals so that you, because there may be opportunities if a change is appropriate at some point, you want the people around you that know you already to be people that you can go to.
When I'm ready to leave you, I am. No, I'm just kidding.
But this is something that young, serious professionals do.
Absolutely.
In their earlier career, the first part of their
career. You're very engaged. You're engaged in your profession and you're engaged in developing yourself.
So the AARP is suggesting, it says, you know something? As you get older, that shouldn't change. You should continue to take courses, to read new things, learn new things, engage in your skill set, get better at what you do, learn more about something you already know about, but there's a lot more that has developed since it's evolved. Everything's evolving around you. But also, very importantly, continue to network. Go to the lunches once in a while. You know, meet the new people that are out there, because you may very well value from or even need those relationships someday in the future, if by chance you're losing your job because they've closed the plant, they've closed the office.
Imagine being 55 and suddenly having to, find a new position. It's not that easy.
So what the AARP was saying is to start preparing. The other thing, too, is if you have, like, teachers sometimes often do, or companies have the old pensions, they said a lot of teachers still can contribute to a 403B through their school system. Save as much money as you can, especially as your children have grown up and gone off on their own. If you're still working, contribute to your 403B or what other source you can, because you may need the extra money. It helps with choices. It's all about control, as my daughter just said. Hey, folks, you're listening to the Get Back to Basics program here. It's AM 790, and this is Money Talk. We'll be right back. Hi there, everybody. Welcome back to the Money Talk program. It's Get Back to Basics Tuesday with Donna Sowa-Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa, and we are, for those of you who are new to the show, we're certified financial planner professionals. I've been broadcasting the Money Talk program. This is our 26th year on the air, sharing your drive time home with you for a very long time. When Donna came on board to do the radio about, 3 years, almost three, two or three years ago.
It's at least 3 years ago.
Yeah. She said, we talked about ideas for specific topics and different things. She says, I can still remember back in 1991 and 2 that once a week you always did a program called Get Back to Basics. And the reason you did it was because, especially in those days, the early 90s, there were a lot of people that didn't even know what an IRA was. They didn't know what a mutual fund was. They didn't know anything about 401ks and 403bs. And this was an era in which we were slowly but surely, as a country, moving into these unique and new financial product and savings and investment opportunities. And what made them unique, Donna, was that they were a lot of the things that we take for granted now, because we talk about them every day, were the first opportunity that the average American, the average consumer, was going to have a chance to participate as an investor, a real investor.
Yeah, it really had to do with the shift from the era of the defined benefit, the pension, as the gold standard of retirement plans, quite frankly. The shift of that over to the defined contribution plan as the industries slowly started to move from one to the other, freezing the old plans and starting defined contribution plans, it really opened up opportunities for people. It also shifted the responsibility for people.
I've known people growing up through my own experience who worked for some of those really, really big major corporations like Microsoft and IBM and others. And I remember talking to one gentleman who was a high-end global executive for IBM. And his pay scale, obviously, was over the top. But his pension was obviously going to reflect that. And he was going to be receiving in retirement, if he retired, I guess, at age 65 in his case. He was going to be receiving something into the tune of like $15,000 to $18,000 a month from his defined benefit pension for the rest of his life.
At age 65. Now, if you're only going to live to age 75, well, maybe that's doable for a pension system to support. But if you're going to be receiving that astronomical amount of money from age 65 until age 95, that's a very different liability for the
company.
Well,
as it turns out, he's now in his late 80s. And he's still here.
So
IBM and other, and I'm not specifying anyone, I'm not an expert on any one of these particular plans, but obviously this was an example. What they chose to do was they had already established for their new employees a 401k plan. It was a fairly generous plan. It was, I think it was managed by Fidelity, so they had a very broad selection of choices.
So they're freezing the old pension plan for new employees.
Yeah, they were going to.
Nothing new.
Well, so yeah, the new ones coming in wouldn't have the old plan. But then what they did was they did something very interesting, and this is the thing that kind of caught my attention, was they went to senior executives who were still there, and they said, we're going to freeze, you sign off and get out from under the defined benefit plan, and we will deposit $8 million in your 401k plan. That's the lump sum value of their life, of their, what would be the expected pension. And what a big company would do is they would go to their lending areas, they would borrow the money, and companies like that size would borrow maybe $1 billion if you're a multi-billion dollar corporation. Mm-hmm. But you borrow that money because what you're doing is you're locking in
the interest rate on
the
money.
You're locking in the cost of that person's retirement because you won't know, like you just suggested, you don't know how long he's going to live. If the person lives 5 years, you win.
You don't know how how long that person's going to live. And as anyone who's been involved in pension reform and watched pension systems and the way they work, you know that you can't predict what the market is going to do. Therefore, you can't predict what the investments within the pension are going to do. And if you have a payout to employees that reflects expectations that are too high for market performance, it's a huge liability for your company.
Yeah, the term right now that you keep hearing, the Department of Labor talks about this all the time, and the term is unfunded liability. The state of Rhode Island talks about it. Every major state does. They look at their pensions. Part of the problem that they have is that their actuaries used an expectation of between 7 and 8.5% average return on their money.
Found out that was a bit too high.
They found out all of a sudden there was a time when that would have been fine. But now they found out that that's a little bit aggressive by any reasonable standard.
You know, part of that is due to market performance, and a part of that is also due to interest rates. And in fact, they're in a very low interest rate environment.
And there will be times out there where the plan does do 8, 9, 10% return, but there'll be years when it does 1 or 2%, or maybe even have a negative year like in 08.
And even if you average that, if you take all years and it all averages out to be, you know, right around what your expectations are, that doesn't mean that you are able to successfully meet all of your liabilities because of the idea of the sequence of returns. And the fact that you get a 7% average rate of return isn't the same as getting 7% compound investment interest every year. It's different.
Yeah. But the real issue is to show you how the landscape has changed for people. Now, I would imagine people like the gentleman I was thinking of, you know, would look at that option and say, geez, I'm going to suddenly have $8 or $9 million in my retirement plan. And, of course, their plan was also very generous. They were matching dollar for dollar up to 10%. So you have a pretty good incentive to put at least 10% of your pay away, because now you're going to have an amount equal to, and you're a highly compensated person, an amount equal to 20% of your pay going into a 401k plan.
Yeah,
that sounds really good.
And you know, what you just described is numbers that are probably too big for most of our listeners to really see as reality.
But think of it in a small percentage.
We see it all the time. We see it all the time happening on a smaller scale with clients. I have clients come in who have said, you know, I'm being offered this. They want to buy out the pension liability on this. Does this make sense? And sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that, like, and I can remember a family member who was part of the Providence school system years ago, and they were, you know, everybody may remember the political debate that went on about whether the teachers being offered these deals, being, you know, again, being very, very generous to retire early, because these are the highest compensated people they have. You're talking about principals and people who were senior
people
teachers.
People who are just at the top pay grade.
They
were 56 years old.
So I can remember sitting there with the family and you know, reading the papers that they had in their hands to say, and I remember the gentleman saying, so do you think this is something we should do? And I said, I think, and I remember saying to him, I said, I think this is absolutely awful. He says, oh, should we shouldn't do it? I said, no, you should do it, but it's absolutely awful.
Because it's not sustainable.
I said, it's for the state.
As a taxpayer.
I said, as a taxpayer myself, I think it's outrageous that they're doing this. But, you know, you're a family member who I love very much. And if they're willing to give you this kind of money, knock yourself out. Go ahead, take it. And that's just the nature of it.
And we've seen so many people who did take that early retirement only to find out that their cost of living adjustment is going to be frozen until that unfunded liability reaches a certain level.
You know, but even with that, I mean, the more common thing, interestingly enough, is those rare cases, the rare corporate pensions, the rare municipal pensions that still exist. There are still some. And we have some people who have been in the system a while. They've already retired. And they're receiving, you give them a range between $75,000 and $100,000. A husband and wife, who are both pensioners, $75,000 to $100,000 a year of income. But they also funded their 403B plans for a number of years. So they got $300,000 and $400,000 sitting in a 403B. And what are they angry about? Well, they're angry because they're over 70 and a half and they have to take money out every year and pay taxes when they'd rather just leave the money alone and not touch it.
And we always remind them these are good problems to have. Right?
God bless you
good
to have
problems
a,
to
well,
have.
Well, you know, they're saying, I would just leave it to the kids. Leave it to my kids and my grandkids. He says, I don't need that. We don't need the money. I mean, our schools are paid up. Our daughters went in and out of school. That's all done. We don't have any bills. The mortgage is paid. And he says, and we earn, you know, $7,500 a week of $7,500 a month of income.
Yeah.
You know, I says, what do we need this? We don't need this. So what? I said, well, I'll tell you what. Let's set up an aggressive gifting strategy for your grandchildren. You wanted to take care of them anyway. How about the money that comes out of the 403B that you have to take out, you just fund their 529 plans with it, which is ultimately what they ended up doing.
And that works.
So they're happy. I mean, it was now what it did was they don't like the fact that they have to do it, but they do like the idea that it's a disciplined plan for saving. And it does work.
That is not something that I see happening a whole lot for the generation that you were talking about in that study, though. My generation of people who are expecting to be working till we're at least, what did you say, 60 over 65 at least until 70.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be a very different situation, and contributing to those accounts, those 403B accounts, your 401k, saving in Roth IRAs if you have the option, is really important. If you want to retire early as part of your plan, since that's what we're talking about, it is integral to be using those plans, especially things like Roth IRAs that have different rules for distributions.
Well, I'll tell you, we have to take another quick break, but in the last segment of the show, when we come back, Donna and I are going to talk about some of the rules related to, the actual rules related to early retirement, and some of the options you may have that can rectify the problem if you feel it's a problem for you. This is Money Talk, Get Back to Basics with Don Sowa and Donna Sowa Allard. We'll be right back. And we're back on the Money Talk program. This is Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard. We're talking about early retirement, either by choice or, as we're finding more and more, people are being surprised that maybe they don't have a choice and they're retiring earlier than they thought they would be able to, which might screw up their retirement plan if they bothered to go to the trouble of calculating out what they would need in retirement because they assumed they'd be working for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, and we talked about in the beginning of the show, it's not just the idea that you are going to be taking withdrawals earlier than you expected to, but it's the idea that I presume that, you know, over age 55, you're at your peak earning years, right? I mean, unless you've kind of you're winding down in your hours, you're probably at the peak of your knowledge and your abilities and also your earnings.
And by the way, in fairness, folks, because I know there's probably a lot of you driving home now, listening to this conversation, say, wait a minute, I'm a mason. I build chimneys. I climb up on ladders and I carry bricks up to the top of a building and I build chimneys up on top of a house. There's a point where I really don't think I could do that forever. I said, well, that person hopefully is saving a lot of money. And in other words, when you do your retirement...
I would expect that there's different planning, though. I mean,
when you're in your 30s planning for that, you better be planning... You're not planning to work to 65 or 70. Maybe you say, I've got to be done by 50.
And you're probably part of a union, right? A union where there'll be some sort of pension that you received after that and you pay into Social Security. So there are different plans for different situations. But the majority of people do expect to be working until they're at least 65 and qualify for Medicare or older because their situation dictates it in terms of what their needs are. However, situations arise, whether it be a health issue, whether it be something forced on you by your employer. It could be an opportunity. Maybe you're offered an early retirement package and you have to evaluate it and say, does this make sense for me? Is there severance? Is there health care? All of these things, these are situations where you may be looking at early retirement where you weren't planning to otherwise. For other people, you may be saying, I really want to retire early. What are the considerations that I should have if I want to make this work?
Some of the people that I've talked to see the most common issue, if they ultimately decide to work longer, because they have the choice, work longer than they might have ordinarily, was because of the sudden what the healthcare costs would be out of their own pocket.
People are surprised. I mean, if you go in, everybody's health situation is different, so your needs are going to be different. If you are in very, very good health, you don't take a lot of medications, you don't have a lot of different expenses, based on the way health plans are now, a high deductible plan with a low premium might make sense for you. But if you have a lot of health needs, you need a much more expensive health plan, and you may be in your early 60s looking at paying, you know, $700, $800 a month in premiums, plus whatever your copays and other costs are. That's a lot of money.
Well, obviously in shows that we've done here on Money Talk, when we're focusing on pensions and Social Security, we go into the details of this part of it. But as most of you may already know, if you're listeners of the show, you can actually start receiving some Social Security at the early age of 62, which is a percentage.
You can, and that's very tempting for people, but you have to remember what you're giving up in order to do that, and that there is a reduction for each month that you take it early, and that follows you for the rest of your life in retirement. So think of what you're giving up for all of that time. I like to use Social Security as a hedge for longevity. I want to wait I assume I'm going to live a long time, and I want to wait as long as I can to take it. Of course, there are some situations where people have to stop working and have to take it early. I understand.
Now, if that's a necessity for you, then you could also note that if you have money in a 401k or a 403b or an IRA type program, you can, because now at 62, you are over 59 and a half. So you can get money out of your retirement savings plan without the 10% excise tax penalty. Although pretty much every bit of the money coming out, except for if this was a Roth, but everything coming out is going to come out as ordinary income.
Right. So you're paying ordinary income taxes on the withdrawals that you take from your, you know, deferred plan, your tax deferred
now,
plan.
Now, if your concern is really about paying your bills and everything else and what will retirement look like, my expectation would be if you're taking money out this way, yes, you're going to factor in taxes, but the good news is you may well be in a lower bracket. I mean, you're earning less money at this point, so you're likely in a lower bracket. So the amount of your income that you do draw, the amount you get to keep is greater as a percentage than it would have been.
My concern is when people expect to spend $10,000 a month or, you know, $12,000 a month and they want to retire at age 60. Well, there's a lot we need to talk about if those are your expectations. That's very different than having a household's need of $3,500 a month, right? That's two very, very different things.
Well, and, you know, another thing is I've known a number of people who, and now in this case, I'm going to honestly say they've chosen to work because they like keeping busy. They like the work they did. They keep busy. And they looked into options before they actually retired. They weren't being forced out. They looked into options before they retired, though, to possibly either freelance or to be work as on a consulting basis as opposed to a W-2. So they were a 1099 employee. They would arrange with the company based upon their needs and the company's needs to work a certain number of hours, certain days of the week. I know a gentleman right now that's working Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and he takes basically Friday and Monday off. And so he says, yeah, that's my semi-retirement, 4 days off. That's plenty of time. I don't think my wife would want me around the whole 7 days. So it worked out well for him, and he gets to keep doing things he likes to do with people that he enjoys being around.
And isn't that the dream? Still being productive, still doing things you love, still engaging, but doing it 3 days a week.
But I also know another gentleman who has a breezeway at the back of the house. It's a lovely room that he likes. And he has his computer set up there with a phone system and everything else. And what is he doing? Now he's working on the computer. He actually set up his own little career that he could do online. And there's lots of them out there.
Yeah. You know, depending on what industry you're in, we do see that a lot. People will leave their corporate job or in their, you know, late 50s and transition into something that doesn't necessarily make as much money, but is on a consultative basis, working potentially part-time, but you're working for yourself.
So I know a guy who was an attorney, and he the stress of that. It was a fairly stressful job, but he was also someone who was in very, very good shape, a fitness buff and everything else. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when he actually retired at some point, a little bit earlier, I think it was like 57, retired, but he got a job. He actually got a job at the health club that he was going to before, and he enjoys doing it. He's actually helping out, training some people, working the different thing. Again, if your ego won't let you do something like that, I get it. I understand
You know, I know a lot of people who are just working in retirement because they like the social aspect of it. I know three people who have worked at Home Depot and couldn't be happier. Oh. They are either a greeter at Home Depot because they say, my whole working life, I was solving problems. I was helping people solve problems. Now, I loved, you know, tooling around and people come in and I can help them with their problems.
Yeah.
Not so bad.
A buddy of mine who is an avid golfer, he decided to retire early. What is he? He's an assistant assistant starter in a field, what they call the course marshal. They drive around mm-hmm. in the red cars and make sure people are keeping up what they're doing, making sure they're not driving their cart into the pond like my dad. The guy came up to me and says, "Excuse me, Mr. Sowa, please tell your father not to drive the cart into the pond, okay? Well, that's against the rules. And the
details.
Bunkers, too. Keep the cart out of the bunkers."
I said, well, things to consider, though, if you are going to be retiring and are going to need to draw some income from your savings is where are you drawing from? And if you are under 59 and a half, you only have a couple of options. If you're under 59 and a half, you can take out the basis, which means the contributions, from a Roth IRA. So if you've contributed to a Roth IRA over the years, whatever money you put in, you can take out without taxes or penalties, even if you're under 59 and a half. That's something that could work for you.
Okay, one last thing. I know this won't work for everybody because it's psychological. Do you have an adult child living in your house with you for free? Well, maybe when you decide it's time to retire, it's time to go to the child and say, okay, you're going to start paying rent. And that's what actually this person did do, because she could pay rent. And she's benefiting from, like, when she was 16 years old living at home. Well, now she has a job, take part of the pay, and help out with the cost of living at home. Because guess what? Mom's now retired. Not a bad thing, and don't feel guilty about doing it. Folks, this is Money Talk with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in tomorrow. Steve Beauvais will be here right at 5 o'clock. Have a good night.